hi, howdy, hello. It's the Oklahoma Today podcast, back to bring you another week of the best in Oklahoma. I'm web editor Greg Elwell, and this week we've got editor-in-chief Nathan Gunner and photo editor Megan Rossman ready to talk your ears off about the Museum of the Red River with our guest Henry Moy.
Hey, Henry, how's it going?
It's fine. How are you doing?
We're doing great. We wanted to talk to you today because obviously our current issue has a big feature about the Museum of the Red River and why everyone in Oklahoma should go visit it as soon as possible down there in Idabel. But tell us a little bit about the museum's history and kind of what you guys are all about.
Well, the museum opened in 1975 as a response to a lot of archaeology that was going on in this region. Just north of us is Beavers Bend Resort, the state park, and Hochatown. I think a lot of people are probably familiar with that development. It's kept us busy. We're the part of the state where everything is still going strong. Actually, our attendance up in the park has been consistent throughout the summer. Actually, the last few weekends have been busier than Labor Day weekend, which is always a really busy weekend. So we get the overflow here in Idabel. We're about 10 miles south. And so a lot of our Texas friends, tourists who are heading to Hochatown and the Beavers Bend Resort area, they'll stop in the museum on the way there or on the way back. So we're pretty busy on Sundays when they come, you know, when they're coming through heading back to Texas. And also Thursday afternoons and Fridays are really busy for us too.
That's awesome. But
the museum opened as a response to all the construction that was going on at Beavers Bend because a lot of archaeology was being done. Mm-hmm. At that time, with all the federal dollars coming into the region, it was required that with big federally funded projects like the dam, building the lake and everything else up there, widening highways, cultural resources mitigation had to be done. And so a lot of archaeology was being done in this area, but it was being done by the University of Oklahoma, University of Arkansas, University of Texas, because they were the big archaeology operations in this region at the time. And this was before the federal government got into their own archaeological programs and had put in their own departments and things like that. So all the federal agencies, the Corps of Engineers, the Forest Service, the Department of Public Management, the Fish and Wildlife Service, they all had to contract with primarily universities to do the archaeology. Well, all this stuff was going back to Norman and Fayetteville and Austin, and nothing was being left behind. So our founders here decided that we needed to build some sort of a facility that would allow the local people to enjoy and learn from the materials that were being removed from this part of the state and, you know, being taken to other places. So our founders, Quintus and Mary Heron, led a group of locals to create the Museum of the Red River. And our original objective was to highlight the regional archaeology and the history of the native peoples in this area, because a lot of that material was being taken out of this region. And so we started out as exhibits of mainly the archaeological and historical projects that were going on. So we started out when the museum opened, we had about 40 objects that the museum itself owned and about 200 that we were displaying from various archaeological projects. And since that time, in the last 45 years, we've grown that collection from about 75, from about 40 actually, to we are now at about 36,000 objects.
Wow.
From all over the world. The initial building was 2,200 square feet. We are now in a facility of 52,000 square feet. So we've grown a lot in the last 40 years, and we've been able to do that because of
the
generosity of a lot of people in this region and everything else. So when I was hired to do the first expansion back in 1996, and it was 2,200 square feet. So it's just been great. So it's kept me here. I was hired to be here for 6 months. And now it's been 23 years. So, but as long as we get to keep building and keep growing, you know, that certainly maintains my interest here. And I've, you know, I've become very much a part of the community, I'd like to think. And I think the community has been very good to me. So
that's great.
It's been a great experience.
You know, you mentioned growth and expansions, and I know you all recently just opened a brand new expansion. You revealed a recent kind of renovation. Can you talk a little bit about some of the things that are new with that now?
Well, with this last renovation, which it took us 2.5 years from the end of 2016 to 2019, we added our most recent 18,000 square feet, and then we renovated an existing 16,000 square feet. It gave us a new lobby, a new front, a new classroom. We improved our dinosaur galleries, our exhibit galleries, and also our collection storage. We're at about 36,000 objects. We're adding between 900 and 1,000 objects to the collections per year. And so actually this year is a big year. We're going to be about 1,100. A couple of years ago, we were 1,800. So we're still an acquiring institution, which is very unusual for most museums in this country. But we expanded to go beyond our local region to now collecting the entire world. And so we have a lot of ground to make up trying to collect African material, South Pacific material, East Asian material, Central Asian material, because we now identify ourselves as an ethnographic art museum featuring the cultures and peoples of the world from prehistoric times to contemporary. So we're busy.
That's awesome.
What you're really saying is, in addition to all the cool stuff that you've had, there's lots of new cool stuff. So if you've been in the last year or 2 years, come back, because there's going to be more.
Oh, very definitely. We always end our calendar year, which is also our fiscal year, but we end the year with our recent acquisitions exhibition, which then highlights some of the things we've gotten in the past year. So we'll be installing about 200 objects after December, the week of December 6th. Our current exhibit ends in that particular gallery, December 6th, and then we'll be installing recent acquisitions, which will take us into the end of February.
Is there anything coming out of the recent acquisitions from last year that you're sad to see being kind of put away?
In our gallery for temporary exhibits, that changes about every 8.5-9 weeks. And so we have a new exhibit. There's always something new to see when people come visit. That's in addition to our more permanent installations. So from last year's recent acquisitions, in all honesty, I can't even tell you what was in it. There was just, another 150, 200 objects that out of the 1,000 or so that we got last year.
Wow. And Megan, what was your question?
I was just wondering what the dates for the new acquisitions exhibit would be.
Sure. Ask me something I can't tell you. I believe ballpark. Whichever is around the 15th, if that's a Tuesday, we open our new exhibits on Tuesdays. So it should be about the 15th of December. Okay. And that'll go into the end of February.
Okay. And what are some of the, I know that there's like kind of the big gasp moments in a museum. I'm thinking about the dinosaur, the Acrocanthosaurus, the things that, people are going to run across and come see. But what is something that people might miss that you would say, hey, don't be sure and look at this? What be sure and take a moment and stop and check this out?
Well, our founders gallery sort of shows highlights from the collection. And so that rotates out also. But it takes us about a year to get everything in and out of there, because it's funny how many things end up being people's favorites if they get to see it 2 or 3 times. And as soon as you take it off exhibit, there's going to be somebody who says, what did you do with my favorite pot, my favorite basket? It's gone. And say, well,
And that's why you always have to keep coming back. That's why people should just exactly. Go and go and go.
Yeah. Exactly. And we're not real keen on keeping track of repeat visitors, but it is, I think it's pretty anecdotally, we know for sure there are people who are making more visits per year than they did in the past, coming back. A lot of the tourists who go to the Beavers Bend area, they're here 3 or 4 times a year, and they'll stop in the museum and see what's new, what's going on. In addition to our exhibits, we have great programs for our local school kids and everything else. Before COVID, we would host between 4,000 and 5,000 school kids a year in groups, in school groups. And they come from Southeast Oklahoma, Southwest Arkansas, Northeast Texas, and Northwest Louisiana. So because of our location in the corner of the state, we actually serve a 4-state area. About 6 counties, we think, is our sort of the bulk of our attendance, plus the Dallas tourists. So this year, of course, was a little bit different, but we did provide teachers with materials. So we were supporting curricular advances that they were making in distance learning. You know, what can they put online to illustrate their curricular materials? And so our own summer camps, we do two summer camps. And so those were also put online. We had the materials and supplies that parents could pick up if they were from out of town. On our website, there was a list of the supplies. We made sure that these were things that were readily accessible in their local Walmart or, you know, office supply store. And so it was great because our summer camps actually were able to reach a broader audience. Our Texas audience, for example, their kids can't come for a week-long summer camp, but they could do it at home with all the all the benefits. And so we tried to take advantage of that. So we're trying to serve our audiences as best we can.
I love that. That's so cool. Speaking of school kids, my next goal is to bring my nephew to see the Acrocanthosaurus. For readers who don't know what that is, can you just give a little brief history about the Acrocanthosaurus that is on display at the Museum of the Red River?
Well, there's a history of Acrocanthosaurus, which we know nothing about from 120 million years ago.
Right.
And the history of it here. We're very fortunate. We are actually the home of what is considered, or what has been officially designated, the state dinosaur of Oklahoma. It is Acrocanthosaurus atticensis. Acrocanthosaurus, if you've not seen pictures of it or whatever, is T-Rex sized. Looks like a T-Rex to most people. Actually, to me, it looks like Godzilla. Because it's sort of a T-Rex with spinal processes that stick up on the back. And it dates, like I said, between 110 and 120 million years old. The most complete specimen of Acrocanthosaurus was found here in McCurtain County, about 15 miles from the museum. So what we have is a reconstructed cast of the entire skeleton. And the original specimen was found, is the only one found with its complete skull and 67 of its 68 teeth. And so that makes it a really rare and unusual dinosaur find. It was about 60% complete, including that skull. And so we've been able to, you know, we were able to put enough of it together with our paleontological consultants. And so we put up the cast and worked it through the state legislature to have it officially designated the state dinosaur of Oklahoma. It is the most complete specimen of its species ever found. So it's
impressive
for us to have.
It's impressive and it's daunting. It's a little scary. It's so big.
It is. And we actually have a mechanical head that will roar and, you know, its eyes will follow you as you're walking through. And
I'm sorry. So are you saying that this could be considered a mecha anthropus? Sorry. I was gonna make a
well, it's
a
just Godzilla the head.
Joke and
yeah, it is
that
just
was pretty
the head.
Good. That was pretty good.
Yeah,
that was pretty good.
Mecha Acro.
Well, Mecha Acro. And we should say too, and we note this in the issue that the Atokensis species name is for Atoka, which
right.
is where
the first, the first Acro ever excavated was in 1940, and it was right outside Atoka. And so the official name for the dinosaur is Acrocanthosaurus, which is high-spined lizard, atticensis, meaning from Atoka. So
love that this dinosaur is an Okie through and through, folks. So you gotta go see her. Yeah, she's really cool. And one of the other things that we noted when we were putting this issue together, we've got a feature about you guys, then we also have a feature about the Spiro Mounds, which are up to the north of you guys a ways. But both of those stories happen to mention something that almost never gets talked about, which is, you know, the fact that so many of the tribal divisions and nations that we know of Native Americans right now are newish developments. And there was this whole other massive culture here. Of Caddo and Mississippian culture. And you guys have some artifacts, some objects from that as well. Is that correct?
Yes, we actually, a lot of the excavations that were done here in the 70s that I was talking about were Caddoan sites, prehistoric sites and historic. And so this was, we actually here in Southeast Oklahoma are in the center of the Caddoan homelands.
Wow.
The Caddoan, because of their history, now their tribal headquarters are in central West Oklahoma, outside Binger, just west of Oklahoma City. But, you know, their homelands encompass really Southeast Oklahoma. Again, the region that we serve in terms of Northeast Texas and Northwest Louisiana and things like that. So a lot of our material, archaeological material, is Caddoan. And then also pre-Caddoan times, the Caddo within our own reconstruction of history, we can identify pretty much Caddoan materials to about the 10th century. So beginning about 950, and then we can see the Caddoan traditions continue into historic times. Before that, what archaeologists identify as woodland time period. And so those are people that we just can't identify by culture.
Yeah. Wow. That's incredible. I just find that stuff so fascinating because I think we think of tribal divisions and we think of them as somehow eternal, you know, these set categories and they develop and change and morph over time. And I just find that endlessly fascinating as we all.
Right now, you know, there are 500 plus officially recognized tribes in the U.S. and 39 of them are here in Oklahoma. So it's there's a lot there for us to historically and whatever. I mean, culturally, historically, there's a lot for us to mine and to present and to try and introduce to our non-native populations.
Yeah. And for us visitors, there's so much to learn. And right. So it's so great. And I should also say, too, just because Megan, I remember I was thinking about why you and I were there that time when we went. It was during this last renovation, actually. Things weren't completely open, but we got to walk around. And it was because you guys have, we were taking a photo of a painting by Harold Stevenson, who's an Ida Bell native. And you guys also have a couple of his works there. And we did a story about him recently as well. So there's so much to see at the Museum of the Red River. You guys are you're such a treasure for the state. And I hope that people listening to this will make it a point to get to Ida Bell as soon as they can and go visit you guys.
And don't forget the great gift shop.
The gift shop. Oh, listeners, stop in at the Museum of the Red River's gift shop. You will regret it if you don't. That place is amazing. Thank you, Megan. Yeah, you guys have such good stuff. So thank you so much, Henry. Dr. Henry Moy, director of the Museum of the Red River in Ida Bell. We appreciate you so much joining us today. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right.
And now for some fabulous and fun events. 10 years in, and we are still pretty excited for the annual return of the Devon Ice Rink. Opening November 23rd and skating all the way through January, this outdoor ice rink is one of many reasons to visit the Myriad Botanical Gardens this winter. Glide over 5,500 square feet of ice, chug a mug of cocoa, and wait your turn, because this year's ice rink will be limiting the number of skaters and asking everyone to socially distance. Visit downtownindecember.com for more info.
All right. Megan, what you got for us?
Oh, is it my turn? Okay.
Go for it.
Since gatherings have to be small or, safer yet, virtual this year, find that warm holiday glow is going to be a little harder. Look no further than the Ardmore Festival of Lights, where Ardmore Regional Park will be ablaze with more than 150 animated displays covered with thousands of twinkling bulbs November 23rd to December 30th. You don't even have to leave your car to tour this 1.5 mile illuminated wonderland. It's free to get in, but donations are appreciated. Call 580-223-4844 for more information.
I love light shows, and I've got one here too, Crystal Christmas. So they say every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings, but what's the Oklahoma version of that? I think it's probably something like every time a Reba song comes on the radio, a scissortail flycatcher eats a chicken fried steak. But I'll let you guys think about that. And while you do so, make plans to drive through beautiful northwestern Oklahoma for Crystal Christmas at Woodward's Crystal Beach Park, opening November 21st and going through New Year's Eve. The 2 million light display will kick off with an opening night ceremony featuring fireworks, carols, and a countdown ceremony. Or you can bring the kids any Thursday and Friday for family nights, which have lighted train rides, live nativity scenes, and photos with the big man himself. And by big man, I don't mean Garth Brooks. I'm talking about Santa. Anyway, go to visitwoodward.com for more info or call 800-364-5352.
The worst part about running a marathon is, without a doubt, the part where you're asked to run a marathon. But probably high up on that list is also having to be awake at a certain time, which anyone who works knows is a real bummer. Thank goodness for Edmund's Turkey Trot, which has gone virtual this year. Compete in a 5K run or a 10K bike ride anytime from November 26th to the 28th, and you'll still be competing just without being around other people. Registration is $20 for each event. Just head to edmundturkeytrot.com to sign up.
You know, they did the Oklahoma City Marathon virtual this year, and I loved it. I loved sitting on my front porch eating a bag of Donettes powdered donuts and being like, "You're looking good, y'all, doing fine."
Well, nothing says I love you like a pair of mittens, a quilt, or any other homemade gift. If you're like most of us and could maybe pull together a macaroni necklace if you really tried, then the Home for the Holidays craft show is here to help. At this long-running Fairview event, makers from near and far gather to sell hundreds of lovely artisanal wares in a wide range of prices on November 28th. For safety, the number of booths this year has been reduced, and vendors and shoppers are strongly encouraged to mask up. freedfamilyfarm.com to find out more. And that's freedfamilyfarm.com.
I really wish I know we've talked about putting this on YouTube at some point, but but boy, I wish everybody could just see how cool Megan looks in her prescription sunglasses reading these events.
She looks like what? She told me earlier she thinks she looks like one of the three blind mice.
Well, yes, I forgot to bring my other glasses over here, and so I'm doing everything wearing prescription sunglasses that have like an 80% dark tint on them.
But let's talk about the rising stars of calf roping, because they are worth talking about. Why do I always get the rodeo ones, by the way?
I do that on purpose.
You're a cowboy.
Is it because I grew up down the street from the rodeo ground in Weatherford? I really did. Okay. Anyway, well, speaking of stars, it's always a lot more fun to watch one rise than to watch one fall. And many stars are going to be rising this Thanksgiving weekend at the Lazy E Arena in Guthrie during the Rising Stars of Calf Roping event, November 26th through 29th. The men, women, and children of rodeo will tie one on, a calf, for 4 days to see who's the ropiest roper who ever roped. Sunday morning will also feature a cowboy church service from Believers Arena Church, making this a complete weekend full of Wild West family action and fun. I wrote a feature about cowboy churches a few years back, and I just had a blast doing that. So it's definitely something to see and quite a cool thing to get to go to. Anyway, visit risingstarsevents.org for more information.
Thank you guys once again for downloading the Oklahoma Today podcast. Please, please, please rate and review the podcast on iTunes. It helps us get new listeners and improves our algorithms, and frankly, it would just make us feel loved. We would also love, speaking of, for you to subscribe to our magazine at subscribe.oklahomatoday.com. We are awfully proud of it. If you've got questions, comments, or concerns, you can send them to oktpod@travelok.com, and we will talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Goodbye.